There we go. Perfect. All right, you happy? Ready?
Yeah.
Okay, fabulous. So thank you for coming, Laura. It's fabulous to have you here today. Laura, do you want to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you?
Yeah, okay. So I'm Laura, and I have my background in residential childcare. So I've worked with children and young people for about the last 18 years. Started off at the bottom, really, and kind of worked my way up. So, you know, I've done from residential care worker up to registered manager. I've also worked as a training and quality assurance manager as well. And now I am self-employed and I do quality assurance visits, so Regulation 44 independent visits to children's homes on a monthly basis. And I also support with kind of new homes opening and mentoring of assistant managers who want to upskill to be registered managers. Yeah, so that's kind of what I'm up to now.
Okay, brilliant. Loads of stuff in there then. So yeah. So when you talk about residential children's homes, what do you mean for people, you know, what do you mean by that?
Okay, so a residential children's home looks after children that are in care. Usually it may well be the first placement. It could be children that have been in numerous foster placements that have broken down for whatever reason. You know, perhaps they struggle to maintain a placement in a family. Some children do struggle with that because it's not their family, if that makes sense. Or they might have just come out of a secure unit, or maybe one step away going into a secure unit if they can't be kind of stabilised and, you know, the behaviour's made less risky. So, yeah, it's a real mixture. Some are there for their own safety, you know. Yeah, real mixture.
Okay. And we're talking children of all ages or older children? Or?
Yeah, usually children's homes that register from the age of 7 up to 17 on admission and to leave by their 18th birthday. Although there are exceptions to that, you can apply for a variation on your registration if they're in full-time education and, you know, continue the placement for a little bit longer.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. So you talked about Regulation 44. Can you explain a bit about what that is for people?
Okay, so children's homes are registered with Ofsted and they are regulated by the quality standards for children's homes and the children's homes regulations. And included in those regulations, there is a requirement for children's home to have an independent check on a monthly basis to ensure that the home is, you know, meeting the needs of the children, that they're hitting the regulations, and kind of, it's a critical friend kind of role, really. So we go in there and kind of take a look through the paperwork and chat to the staff, chat to the children's parents, social workers, teachers, all of those people can be included in the audit to, you know, give their feedback on the service that is being provided to the child. From that visit, we then produce a report that will go to the registered manager, the responsible individual, who may or may not be a director of the company, maybe somebody who's employed, it may be, you know, a director, depending on what their experience is. And that report gets their feedback, they get to see any actions on it that need to be met, and that goes then off to Ofsted as well. Now, Ofsted use the Regulation 44 reports as well as any notifications from the home. Homes have to notify Ofsted of significant events regarding children. So, you know, any kind of safeguarding concerns, any significant police incidents, anything like that, Ofsted have to be notified. So they use the Reg 44s, look at actions, and they use notifications, and they use their actions from the last inspection as well to kind of put together a picture of where the home's at, really. And then when they come again to inspect, use all of those things to come and look at their kind of key lines of inquiry and what the themes are, you know, throughout the home and the things that they need to look at for the next inspection.
Right, okay, fine. Yeah. So it's quite a complex thing, isn't it? So yeah. So it's a monthly visit to every children's home.
Yeah.
By an independent visitor, essentially.
Yes, yeah, somebody not linked to the home, yeah.
And then as part of that, then you feed all of that back, and then there should be actions that come out of it.
Yes, yeah. Sometimes there's more than others. Depends what's going on. Depends on if there's been any incidents with kids or any missings or any safeguarding concerns, allegations, all of that stuff gets checked through. So sometimes they're kind of, there's less in them than others. It depends what's going on. If you've got a very settled home and, you know, there's none of that going on, sometimes there tends to be less actions. So
and do you tend to, does it tend to be the same? So you, as a Regulation 44 visitor, is that, would you, or would you would visit the same home, or what does that need to change? It doesn't need to be a different person each time.
It doesn't need to be a different person each time. No, you can visit the same home for, you know, for a period of time, as long as you, as long as you're independent of that home and of that, you know, of that company. Some companies employ somebody specifically just to do that role, and that's allowed within the regulations. Some people prefer somebody truly independent of that organisation to come in, and feel that it's kind of potentially less room for bias, really, in that respect. So
that makes sense. And so when you're talking about the children's homes, and you're talking about them being generally for young people under 17 when they enter. Now there's this area, isn't there, of unregulated care at the moment. And it's something I know, anyone who follows me on social media will know that I bang on about this a little bit, but it is, it's an area of concern, isn't it? So
tell
me what your thoughts are around it, and, and tell, well, perhaps it, let's just explain what it is perhaps to start with.
So unregulated placements are usually used for older teenagers, so kind of 16 to 18 year olds, and you know, some children get to an age whereby, you know, they feel like they're ready to live more independently than what can be offered in a children's home. You know, children's homes are very rigorously kind of legislated, and they have to hit certain, you know, regulations, as we discussed before. So it can be quite intense in terms of supervision levels and rules and things for the kids that we have to have in place. So there are people who set up companies or organisations specifically to provide supported accommodation, really, for those young people that are 16 to 18. And, you know, there is shortages. There's more and more children coming into care each year. There's more, you know, businesses are opening in terms of children's homes. But, you know, it's a bit of an in-between step, really, between being fully looked after and being fully independent. And that's where the grey area lies, because if you are providing support rather than care, that then is not regulated.
Because if they're over 16, isn't that Ofsted's cutoff, isn't it? Is that right?
Well, Ofsted's cutoff is technically 18. A child could stay in a children's home up until the age of 18. And as I said previously, there could be a variation to extend that. Mm-hmm. Depending on the circumstances and obviously other young people that may be placed in the home. But it may well be that, you know, the authority or the child feels that, you know, they are ready to kind of take that next step and move on. In which case, you know, on some occasions that may be the right move for the child, that they do move into a supported accommodation. You know, if they're settled, if they're doing well with their independence, if they're in education, employment or training, you know, I think at that point a social worker would look to potentially get them into that kind of supported package, really, if they don't need such an intense care package.
And so
that's where the move on is, but it doesn't need to be regulated if it's 16 to 18 present.
And that's, I mean, I think some of the concern is around, obviously, some of these young people are incredibly vulnerable, aren't they?
You know, absolutely.
And having spoken to loads of different providers at the moment, there's a real mixed bag of provision, isn't there, between people who have huge amounts of experience and understanding of the sector and others coming into it really quite fresh and perhaps not understanding the complexity of some of the young people.
Yes, definitely, I'd say so. And I think that's some of the difficulty in placing, you know, some of these young people in those provisions, really. I mean, some young people will manage it really, really well, and others just won't. And it's looking at and understanding the history of, you know, that young person, and maybe, you know, if they've got attachment issues or mental health issues or any other things that may make them vulnerable. I mean, to be young at that age and living in a place of your own, I would suggest would make a child pretty vulnerable anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
Just those two things. I mean, if you look at kind of, you know, you generically, you know, across the UK now, people are staying at home longer, you know, a lot to do with property prices, rent prices, you know, working circumstances, whatever it may be, people are staying at home with a parent or a parent or a carer generally longer than they used to. So expect a traumatised child to go from being in a situation where they're in a children's home being looked after and having quite an intense care package, you know, around them, to putting them in, into a supported accommodation provision where they, you know, they may well be supported, they may have that package, but it's not care, it's support. And they're kind of more left to their own devices. I think for a lot of children, it's sink or swim really at that point, I would suggest. And I think that's why Ofsted have, you know, don't like children really being put in unregulated placements, but authorities are left in a position where that's the in-between thing, that's the stopgap. And they need those placements and they use those placements. And, you know, whatever anybody's thoughts are on them, not going anywhere, and they're there and they're being used, and children are being placed in them. So, you know, I think it's important that they're doing this social care review of children's social care at the moment to look at those things in particular. I suspect it may become regulated in the not too distant future.
Regulated by Ofsted, you think?
Potentially, yeah. If they're under 18, it would fall into the realms of, you know, what Ofsted are dealing with in terms of children's homes. Mm. So whether they would be, you know, looking after that sector as well, it would make sense for that to happen, I guess. Obviously, then you've got CQC, which is more, you know, adult care. And that's more regulated activity. So that would be, again, for care, for personal care, for, you know, mental health care, potentially learning disabilities, those kinds of things. But that's more adults than children. So I think it's important to remember, if you're providing that service for 16 to 18-year-olds, they are children. Mm. So, you know, I think it's important to provide a good quality of service. And cool. You know what? There's a lot of fantastic providers of that service out there that would like it to be regulated. So
absolutely. I think there's a lot who are calling for regulation, aren't there, to be able to showcase how good the work and the service they're offering is, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I just think that's really important. I'd like it to be regulated.
Yeah. From when we're thinking from a property perspective, from a looking at the children's homes, the actual building itself is registered by Ofsted as well, isn't it? Yeah. So the Ofsted would register the building, and that's what's separate when we're looking at supported living for sort of 16 to 18-year-olds.
Yeah.
But if you're thinking with your kind of provider hat on, I guess, Laura, thinking about the buildings and what kind of change, what needs to be different about a building in if it's to become a children's home, is it a standard family house or is there different adaptations?
There are different adaptations. Predominantly now the move, it seems to be a move away from what used to be the larger homes that tended to be more institutionalised, I'm going to say, you know. Tends to be more so kind of family homes. The largest ones I've come across, you know, over the last few years have been up to about 6 beds. Generally, most companies and organisations run somewhere between 2 and 4 beds for their children's homes, and they are just usually just a normal family home. And it depends what you're looking at providing. There are some specialist providers out there. There are some providers that look at providing, you know, outdoor pursuits kind of placements. There are providers that are very rural. You know, some children may need to be placed out of the county that they live in, and a provision that's very rural may, you know, meet their needs better than somewhere that's, you know, in a city, depending on what their issues are.
So that's actually children needing to be placed away from where they were originally. Yeah. That's what you're saying. Yeah.
that can happen. Authorities, again, are steering away from moving children too far away from the area that they're from. But for some children, it is, you know, it is needed depending on, you know, what's going on with them and what the situation is. The circumstances are so different. You know, I live quite close to the Peak District, so there's, you know, there's a couple of companies fairly close by me, kind of do the outdoor pursuit stuff, and you know, it's a great area for all of that stuff. But then you've also got children that, you know, would thrive to be closer to where they're from, and that, you know, like to be on the main transport links, like to be close to the friends, like to be able to go easily to school or college, you know, and all of those things. Some children have got less restrictions on visiting the families than others. So, you know, some are placed closer to the families, some are placed further away if there are those restrictions. It really is, again, as individual as we as adults are, so are these children. So there's a massive scope there for providers to actually look at who are they choosing to provide a service for, who's going to benefit from it, how are they going to benefit from it, and kind of having those conversations with the placing authorities really about, you know, what they need. You know, is there a shortage of something that they're missing?
So there just isn't a one size fits all, basically, is what you're saying. It's many different types of areas.
Some of the larger companies that have got lots of properties and, you know, lots of registered homes will have a bit of a mixture. So they might have some that are kind of more community-based placements that maybe got two beds. They might have, you know, more rural placements. They might have an outdoor pursuits kind of team, work with children in that way. There's so much available.
So when you're thinking from a property point of view, you're saying sort of up to four beds is kind of about average, three or four beds at the moment. Yeah. So a standard sort of three or four bed semi-detached or terraced house, sort of just a standard family home.
Yeah.
And nothing specific within that adaptations wise, you know, that you're aware of that would need to be done.
I mean, in the children's homes regulations, if you look at those and the kind of information in there that is for setting up a home, things like your health and safety are really important. So, you know, you have to be making sure that you've got all your correct kind of fire precautions in place. Your smoke alarms have to be wired in mains, you know, you can't just have the battery fitted ones, those kind of things. Ideally, if you're thinking of a larger home, you need to consider the use of the bathrooms. If you've got staff using the house as well, you know, sleeping in or whatever, then that's a consideration in terms of the way the house is set out and the way it works. Is the space for, you know, friends or family to visit, or, you know, have they got some room for meetings and things? You know, sometimes meetings happen often outside of the home, but if there's a space available in the house for that to happen and a child's in their own environment, you know, that can be quite a nice thing to have as well. But again, depends on area, depends on budget, you know, all of those things. There's a million and one considerations.
I suppose where a lot of property investors will try and squeeze lots of extra bedrooms, you know, when they're doing a shared house, they'll make all the downstairs rooms extra bedrooms. I'm guessing really you need that communal space as well as the bedrooms, don't you, in a children's home? That's going to be important.
Definitely, yeah.
And then space.
You're trying to replicate a family environment. That's not to say that you can always achieve that ideal. Some children can be quite resistant to it, but you know what they're resistant to and what they need are two very different things. So yeah, we do try to replicate a family type nurturing kind of environment for them, really. So yeah, communal area is really important, but again, they do need their own space as well. So
of course. And then staff, there needs to be space for staff to sleep in as well, wouldn't there, I guess, as well. So
that makes sense. Some homes have ensuite facilities for the staff. Some will have a separate kind of toilet that the staff will use. In some homes, everything's a shared facility. So, you know, the staff will use the same bathrooms as the kids or whatever. But again, it depends. That's more kind of usable in a in a smaller home, really. So if you've only got one or two children in there, you know, that's not such a problem for staff to be sharing those facilities. But if you're looking at kind of four or six, then, you know, obviously you're going to need more bedrooms, you're going to need more bathrooms.
Of course. And what else, what other factors would influence a provider kind of choosing a property? What, you know, other than the actual property size? And,
we have to do a safe area report for our homes. We go to Ofsted as well. So we look at the area. We may liaise with the local police. We look at things like crime rates. We look at what particular crimes are more prevalent in a particular area. So that then is used on the impact assessment for young people as well on the referrals. So if you've got an area with kind of quite high CSE concerns.
What do you mean by CSE? Sorry.
Sorry, child sexual exploitation.
Thank you.
Yeah, so if you've got an area with those kind of concerns, you know, then it might not be wise to be taking children and young people who have those kind of issues in that area.
Of course.
So it's just about looking at what the issues are in the area. You know, if you've got a lot of gang crime, it might not be advisable to put a teenage boy in there who's got a lot of kind of gang involvement or criminal kind of exploitation issues, really. So it really is about being aware of what's on your doorstep in terms of facilities, how easy they are to get to, what kind of young people you're looking at taking, you know, what kind of issues that they might have, and how that's going to be impacted on in by the community that they're living in as well.
Wonderful. Thank you. That was really helpful. I think that's really helped people to understand a little bit more about children's homes, how we'd select properties, yeah, and some of the issues around it particularly, yeah, as well.
Neighbours can be an issue.
Of course. Yeah.
Obviously, you don't want to be going into huge areas of deprivation with very high crime rates for your children, ideally, although property tends to be cheaper in those areas. Mm-hmm. It does happen. Because cost can be, you know, a massive implication for providers. You know, they're setting up as a business. Yes, they want to provide good care, but at the end of the day, they're a business as well. So, yeah, property can be cheaper in those areas, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that's the best place to be setting up.
No.
In much more affluent areas, you know, they can be in some places with some people. Again, everybody's different, bit of an air of ignorance, you know, and they might feel that, you know, they don't want it in their backyard. So again, that can bring its own issues. But it's just about kind of communication really with people and helping them to understand that, you know, it's not necessarily all going to be a bad thing for their house and their area, really. And that these children need somewhere to live.
Yeah. That's the bottom line, isn't it? They're very vulnerable children.
Yeah.
Who need good quality homes to be in, really, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Laura, thank you. That was really helpful. Thanks ever so much.